Blog Talk Radio.
Morning, everybody. How's it going? It is the first Saturday in January that we are doing the show. Welcome, welcome, welcome. We thank you for being here with us. Yet another year, yet more opportunities. We could do potentially 2 hours on top of the 2 hours and 40-something minutes of the Cat Williams interview that a conversation, I should say, that happened with Club Shay Shay. Shouts out to Shannon Sharp, man. That was nice. And I know it wasn't pre-written, but still, it was nice. It was a very good piece. Cat was on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Cat was just on, and yeah, there's a lot that we'll dig into with respect to that later on in the day, but. I had you, Rodney. I don't know what happened. I got you, Sister Rashi. But Cat was on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and we'll dig into that a little bit later on in the show. It's also the anniversary of January 6th. 3 years ago, we sat in horror. The majority of the country sat in horror, confusion, disgust. Some of us felt a different type of feeling because of our ties to the nation. And then there are others that sat back and cheered it on. But that happened 3 years ago. We'll discuss that as well today. The Supreme Court has decided to take up the Colorado case with respect to whether he is eligible to be on the ballot or not, which they are going to have to fast track. They initially said that they wouldn't take it, or if they did, they wouldn't fast track it, but it looks like they are going to fast track it now. So that, ladies and gentlemen, that decision, whatever it is going to have worldwide ramifications, whatever it is. But if it goes against the interests of our democracy, I will become a passport bro. It's time to leave. Because that is going to be dangerous for all people, not just black people, but for all people. That is going to open this country up to something that we have never thought could happen in the confines of this American structure, this American dream, this American experiment. But we'll dig into that later as well. As we always do about this time, I'm going to complain about my first world issues. So I've been without an ensuite. Shit, I want to say for about 8 months. So my situation is thus. The shower has the knob, not the handle type situation, but has the knob that you turn water on through. I'm sorry. So I'm using it And I'm like, this doesn't seem right, because it literally went both ways. No disrespect to you, Rashi, but the knob went both ways. So I'm playing with it, and if I went to the right, if I went to the left, I got water. Like, that's not right. It's, at some point, it should stop. Well, eventually, the knob stopped working. And I really want to say it's been about 8 months. So I get on my grizzle because I'm like, yo, you know what? It's the end of 2023. I don't want to walk into 2024 with a number of problems. So I go out, and I think I shared this with you all last week. I did the DMV situation. I had to go to the Department of Motor Vehicles. You know, that was a problem. Well, the guys came out actually earlier that day to look at the plumbing, and they were like, well, yo, you do have a pressure issue, because that was another thing. So if I turned the water on in the bathroom, I would get low pressure in the kitchen or vice versa. Now, I'm used to that being on the East Coast. Rodney, you can attest to that. You know, most of the homes, especially the further north you go, the water's tied in. So if you're using the water, that you better not flush that toilet while someone's in the shower, because you will either scold them or you'll give them a cold-ass shower all of a sudden. It depends on how the water's tied together. So I'm like, but this house is a newer house. It shouldn't be that way. It wasn't that way when I first moved in. What's going on? Come to find out, they actually had to do some digging up front because the valve was actually bad. It was just totally bad. It was so bad that if you turned on multiple water outlets, it sounded like somebody was drilling in the walls. It was like, it was bad. So the cats came out on Tuesday to fix that. So I come back in, turn my water on. You know, obviously I knew I had to let it run for a little bit because I got a little brown water out of that situation. I knew that was coming. But then, boom, I now have my on-suite. And I have been not happier in a very long time that I can actually just wake up, walk into my bathroom, in my bedroom, take a shower, and then come out, handle the rest of my business for the day. It's just a beautiful thing. Yes, it's a first world issue. I understand I'm a spoiled bitch, but that is my life, and that's the life that I like now. So that's that. Morning, everybody. What's going on with you? Rodney's on. He's up. Goodness gracious. You know it's a special day when Rodney's up in on time. Brother Barry's here.
Hey,
Sister Rashi's here. The gang is all together yet again. What's going on, everybody? How you all feeling? Happy New Year. Isn't this the last day you can say that? Isn't it like a 7-day rule into the new year where after that you can't say Happy New Year anymore? Is that how it goes?
If you're Chinese, the New Year, in fact, there are two other sectors of people who are not officially into their New Year. One is some of the Chinese don't do it until February, sometime in February. And people who understand, naturalists who understand the cycle of the planet know that you don't renew in the winter time. You renew, spring is, the first day of spring is their new year. So,
okay.
Yeah, you're right. It is the new year for some, but not for all.
Okay. Brother Barry, what did you do for your new year?
Man, I just hung out with my children, bro. That was the thing. Just happy that my daughter was here. We hung out in the house. I had just got back. That evening out of town. So we got some time in with the kids, got a good conversation in with them, cook some food, and relax.
Okay. All right. OG, what's going on, Rodney Smith? What you do for you? How'd you bring in the new year, brother?
Happy New Year, everybody. Me and Brother Barry had the same state of mind, because that's exactly what I did, was I hung out just me and mine.
Okay. So is it the decorum? Is it, I don't know, the proper protocol that you can only say Happy New Year up to the seventh day of the month? Because, like, at some point, doesn't that get played out? Like, we already into the new year. It's not a new year no more. We 6 days in now.
Is that your tradition? Does anyone else know about this besides me? Is this just something that I've only heard in my life?
Well, see, here's
the deal. You said you keep going.
Up until a certain point, when you see someone for the first time or communicate with them after the year has turned, it's somewhat appropriately to say, hey, Happy New Year, and do exactly what you, well, almost did for all of us, and ask them how did they ring it in, or did they have any decide to do anything new with their lives. But, Lee, at some point, say 30 days later, it's Happy Valentine's Day. You move on to the next holiday. You don't keep talking about New
Walmart
Year.
Already has.
Okay, and then now I won't even be saying it because my next holiday is Dr. Luther King. So let's move on to the next reason to celebrate, which is real, the accomplishments of one man in his life, of one man's ability to collaborate with the power that he was surrounded with in his lifetime. Let's go on. I'm more than happy to move on to MLK Day. Because what it ain't even New Year's for everybody. But if we're going to make it have significance, let it be that my community, since you asked, thank you, Lee, for what I did at the beginning of the year, was riddled with bullets. And when I say the bullets started when the Chiefs won a football game, and they did not stop until the sun came up. And so if you wanted to go outside, you would have needed a gun because everybody around me was shooting on all four sides. Eventually, when you realize the community you live in, you just sit on down and let the bullets ring.
Has anyone besides me seen The Color Purple? So I'm the only one?
Yeah.
Okay.
And how did you find
it? So I went to the movies to see The Color Purple. And that was a 2+ hour event that I will never get back in my life. It was not horrible. Let me say that. It was not. But it was more musical this time than theatrical. And yes, I knew it was a musical. No, I did not think that they were going to lean as much into the musical than the theatrical this go around than they, but they did, and it was heavy. I mean, heavy. I find the performances, I honestly believe, were better all the way around, except with the exceptions of Danny Glover. And whomever the older brother was that played his father.
You have to answer that.
Yeah, I think that Louis Gossett did a good job, but not that other cat, it was the whole packaging of him that cemented him in my mind. And then the brother that played Mr. in this one, again, good job, but I just preferred Danny's performance. You know, I believe
he inculcated that idea in there. And there are people who have those iconic roles, right? You can't move past them. And that dude, the little bitty dude that played his daddy, he did that in every role. I can remember him for every single thing I've ever seen from not Soulja Boy. Is it Soulja Boy? Brother, Mr. Rodney is a Soulja Boy. He played
a soldier story.
Here we go. And some of it was his voice, but he was a brilliant actor. But yeah, Danny Glover is forever Mister, and I kind of hate him. You know, I kind of hate Danny Glover a little bit. Because he's Mister, you know what I'm saying?
Now I'm gonna tell you who shocked me in that movie. David Alan Greer shocked me in that movie. I already had.
He's
oh my
brilliant.
God! Like
brilliant.
Yeah, but I think I was sleeping on his brilliance to a degree. Now, I'd already some various feelings from him. So there were some snippets throughout his career that he could do different stuff and he could be a different way. But seeing him in that movie, I was like, wow, this brother has been slept on. He has real range. And I think he was pigeon-toed in the genre of comedy so much that his range wasn't effectively allowed to sprout. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you saw that his range even in Boomerang. So it was a comedic role. It wasn't as heavily comedic. And he could come and deliver a serious performance. Now, he played a naivete character in Boomerang, but still, it was more serious than, it was more comedic because he was naive as hell. But, that cat was sterile. That cat was sterile. I was like, wow.
And he's a writer. And he is a writer. When you hire, they call him Dag. When you hire Dag, you get also a partial producer and a writer. If it ain't right, he ain't finna put it out on air. They have agreements with these kind of gentlemen that if it ain't right, that he's so seasoned in the game that he's allowed what they call comedic license. And so, yeah, when you hire whoever. He probably was a part of the think tank that hired some of the other people. Because once you hire a man like David Alan Greer, you get partial producer, you get partial director, you get a writer. And, of course, he's from all the way from theatrics. The only thing I think he ain't did is cut a real sad reggae album or something, or a pop album. Yeah. But he's done it all. Including like shows where he was doing hand-to-hand combat, including wowing us with the little hat on the side when he was him and Damon Wayans.
Blaine, and even then,
when they had a chance to be flagrant, he still kept just a tad bit of his masculinity. He wasn't ready to go full, you know. So, he's a slept-on talent. But I think he likes it. I think he likes it because he don't have to be beholden, you know, to a behavior that he don't want to agree to. He don't have to be watched and managed and maintained.
So I was surprised that no one else has seen the movie as of yet, because it's done pretty good numbers. Do any of you plan on going to see it? Rodney, you plan on going to see this one? Because I know you was at Black Panther like 276,000 times. So Color Purple, you passing on that one?
I never saw the first one and do not plan to see this one.
Wow, you never – okay, hold on. You've never seen the first one in theaters, or you've never seen the first one, period?
I have never seen the first one, and I do not plan to see this one.
Oh, so you never saw the first one at all. Okay. Brother Barry?
So I did see the first one. I went to the theater with my auntie when I was a very young man. Saw it. I appreciated the first one. Got older, kind of understood the slant of where they were going. In today's climate, I can't support it.
Okay.
In today's climate, I can't support it. Too many negative connotations about black relationships, black male patriarchy lead. I don't want to, the romanticizing from what I've heard of other types of relationships. It just sounds like
a homosexual relationship
production.
Homosexual relationship between
Well, I knew about that in the movie with Suge and what's his name, but it sounded like it was other relationships that kind of expounded out of it on the show. Okay. That they went more. Okay. So for me, once I heard that, I said, and you know, if I see it, I see it. You know, like, but I don't think I'm gonna spend some money on this one.
I got you. Okay. Fair enough. Sister Rashi, you haven't seen it as of yet? I thought you'd be running to the theater.
Well, I have performed The Color Purple, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I have performed The Color Purple. I've read not just the book a couple of times, but the screenplay, all right? I have watched the movie about 3 or 4 times, and I do not intend to go and see the new rendition. But some of it is what Brother Barry say. I think it's Spielberg. No, Spielberg is the right. No, yeah, Spielberg is the director. Alice Walker is the writer. I do support Alice Walker. I do believe her narrative is true. I do believe there was a capability or a possibility that in the Deep South, when some black young fella had got his daddy's war pension and got him a decent farm, you know, and had mistreated one woman and people were falling ill and had these children he needed to care for, and that there was this girl who had a choice between the devil of her stepdaddy that she knew and the devil of the dude that she didn't know, that perhaps he was sort of handsome, maybe he'd be kind, she could sway him, and she could do something about these little feral kids. And so she did, and that how her life was a life of service, how black women have a life of service, and that she had tried to make the best out of a situation missing her other half, her security blanket, her sister. The story for me is not the male narrative, because the writer is not a man trying to make men look good. She's trying to explain these sacrifices and nuances that come to the plate of women when they have to decide how they're going to make a life. Now, we have to realize this era is set in. She couldn't go get her a bank account or nothing like that. This is before civil rights and all this other stuff was going on, right? This is in the 20s?
I thought it was the 30s. 30s into
the,
I think 30s? The 30s into the 40s, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, we talking about after the Depression? So we talking about this era of time when everybody was in flux and how it looked on us, how it manifested in the South. What are some of the traditions in the South that's what it means not to kill a black man when he really, really has wronged you, when you have the capability of not just hurting him by poisoning him every day, but you have an opportunity to slit his throat. But you don't. You don't. Because there's something in you arguing, in a black woman that argues for goodness. It looks for love. It looks for love anywhere after a while when you've had an absent mama, an abusive stepfather, a husband who clearly did not care about you. And where was she was to ever get love? The boogeyman could have kissed Miss Seeley, and it would have become a spiritual. You understand? When you get to looking for love out in the universe. So I value the narrative. However, I don't need to see it play. I don't need to see Precious no more. I don't need to see it's a whole bunch of movies I don't want to see no more. Honestly, I don't want to ever see the movie Claudine again. It's a whole bunch of narratives I don't want to see anymore. But you have to honor the spirit that the writer brought this to you in. It's a reason for it. Just like this new show, American Fiction, is telling you. It's a reason why some scripts get in and some scripts don't. And somebody pushed this new color purple narrative out again for a reason. One is we ain't had no good musical in a while. What was the last decent musical that did any numbers? What was it, Dreamgirls?
Well, before we go down that road, let's stick with the theme of, you know, pushing the narrative. So, which brings us to Cat. Have you seen Cat Williams' interview on Club Shay Shay? Mr. Rashi.
Of course I've seen. But it's only of course I know, because I've seen virtually everything Cat Williams has ever put out on the internet. I am a somewhat sicker fan of Cat Williams. So if you go back into
the archives,
you know that. Huh?
Why are you a Cat Williams? Yeah, why are you a Cat Williams?
Well, for one, he kind of told on himself. He's an information collector. He and I both. You too, Lee. Not that I'm a sicker fan of yours, but I align myself with information collectors. Barry, Brother Rodney, information collector, okay? If it's out there to be known and if it can be used amongst the populace in a positive way, they down for it. And Cat is that way. People who don't get the benefit of his benevolence, I hate to make it sound like that, but that's how they talk about it. This not me because I ain't met him. The people who discuss how he impacts their lives explain what it means to be like around him and how it's you just a few conversations into a revelation on how you could do something different, better, when, where, how, who could get it together for you. And then after a while, it's a manifestation. He's a manifester. Does that make any? He ain't no influencer, though. It's a difference.
Okay.
I don't know how to explain it because I'm not close-eyed thing. I could manifest as a nice head of braids with maybe a quick weave on top. I could manifest maybe a lesson or two in math or something. I can't help you, like, springboard your business off the ground, but Cat Williams can. Cat Williams can turn you into a star. And as Lunell said, she was scrounging, and then she met Cat Williams, and then she was on tour. And he made her. He picked her up over Melanie Camacho and them, even though Camacho was a part of his crew. He created a consortium of women, not just because he liked women.
Yeah, he said that.
But he told on himself also. This is what I need y'all to hear. He told on himself. He explained how he had to scrounge it by. And so, because it's only because people who knew about his reality were about to start telling. So you have to tell before others tell on you. But when they fucked up and did was, they didn't, because when you mess with people like that, when they tell all. They just say, fuck it. Let's light this blunt and get it popping.
Okay. So I know, Brother Barry, you've watched it because you and I talked about it. Rodney,
yes.
You're passing on it. Or did you watch it? I don't know what happened.
Negative. But, as you see, I was almost dozing on this one. So, no, I'm not. I barely know who Cat Williams is, and most of that is through you.
So, Rodney, he's a child prodigy. And I don't think that the people that are dealing with him understand the level of intellect that they're battling. As I told someone this morning, Cat Williams did a sit-down stand-up. And he pretty much did a routine. And as you can see by the responses, he's getting the responses that he knew he was going to get. And I would say this, you know, it was some points in the conversation or in the interview that I felt like really should be talked about more than some of the insights of what he said about the people. It was the things he was talking about with Hollywood. And I felt like those are the things, you know, when he talked about the situation with Taraji P. Henson and, you know, this idea that we've glamorized Hollywood as a thing to do with these celebrities, and we talk about how they have a life that we want to live, to really look at it that they're not making the money that we think they're making, or some of them are not as talented as we think they are, right? They're kind of doing this thing
but they keep
where they're taking
opportunities
advantage.
Because of the gatekeep.
Well, not only just the opportunities, when I'm thinking about Steve and Sid and some of the videos I've seen after Cats where they showed them stealing his jokes or stealing other people's jokes. And you think about the lesser-known black comedians who are not being able to get mainstream, but someone else is using your material and not giving you credit for it. It's akin to white folks stealing our inventions and taking credit for the inventions. Because if you're in the business of dealing jokes, if someone takes your invention, now you can't use that invention yourself. You get what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was a pretty interesting. It was a great way to start out the year. But also the conversation about his father and that piece about his dad and about someone had to go. And that discussion, the dynamics of parenting. And so I just thought it was a lot there to really unravel.
So hold on. Let's not glaze that over. So, Rodney, I know you are abstaining from listening to the interview, but I thought this was worth a greater depth of discussion as well, as Brother Barry did, because he tells the story of how he was 12, 13 years old. And as Brother Barry just said, somebody had to go. So him and his father got into a disagreement, and it became physical. And the disagreement occurred because his father said, according to him, his father said, God had told him that he was out having sex, that he was committing some type of sexual act. So him and his father got into it physically. And he says, somebody had to go for a number of reasons. Reason number one, he just lied on God because I was 12, 13 years old. I had no concept of sex. Like, I had not even been even remotely close to that. So, he grew up in an extremely stringent religious household. So, you lying on God was strike number one for him. Strike number two was, I'm still a child living in this man's house. So I had to, at no point would he be sleeping safe, nor would I be sleeping safe, because again, I'm still a child living in this man's house. So one of us had to go. Now it got to a point where it got to the system, and his fear was the system breaking up his brothers. So he made a very brief comment that a portion of the agreement was that he would leave so his brothers could see him. And that's why he left. Said, he had been working for years and saved up some money. And he went, but did he say a bus station or did he say a truck stop? I think he said a truck stop.
Truck stop.
And he said,
truck stop.
Yeah, he asked one of the guys, did he ask where the money would go? No, he said something about the weather. He said where the best weather was because he grew up in Ohio. And the guy was like, well, Florida. He said, well, I'm going to Florida. You going to Florida? He said, yeah, so I'm going with you. And he rode with the guy to Florida, and he hit Florida again. He was 12, 13 years old, so he was homeless for a moment just trying to figure it out. But he had cash. And as he was on the streets living, he interviewed the folks around him who were former doctors, lawyers, you name it, they were black, white, Asian, Hispanic, Indian, you name it, they were Asian, you name it, they were. And they all told him various stories, but most of the stories came back to the same thing, drugs, and how drugs had ruined their lives, took over their lives. So he made the decision then that he would never indulge in a hard narcotic. So his narcotic of choice is liquor and weed, and that's it. You know what I'm saying? Because he said, you know, I saw what other narcotics had taken away from these people. You're talking about some brilliant people, but they made that one bad choice, and this is where they ended up. I didn't have that inclination to wind up homeless on the street because of a choice that I made. So, yeah, the dynamic between him and his father was huge. I think that was a major pivotal point in that cat's life, because as you said, Brother Barry, you know, he was a prodigy, but the brother was smart as hell. You know what I'm saying? He was dang near off the charts. And for him to utilize that intellect, that those abilities to, you know, become a comedian, some would think is a waste, but obviously he's done pretty well. And that, too, ties into the first conversation that we had about the movie. A father is very influential in many lives of most children's lives. Had a conversation last weekend. I was out, ran across a young lady who's from Ghana. And we were just chatting it up. Nothing. We were just chatting it up. And I was telling her about the female comedian that's from Nigeria, I believe. And I just saw her special. And she was saying how – no, I saw an interview after her special. She was saying how – because the person interviewing her was like, well, how did your parents feel when you told them you wanted to be a comedian? She said, I didn't tell them. Because I wouldn't be here if I told him. I could only imagine my mother now. Oh, comedian, what is that? You cannot make money being a comedian. Did you want to make people laugh? How are you going to feed yourself? So, you know, she just, and the young lady was like, yeah, you know, in Ghana, I know a young man who lives here, but he wanted to, I think he wanted to be an engineer. But his father told him he is not in America to be an engineer. He's in America to be a doctor. Nothing else was acceptable, point blank period. And now he's a doctor. Like, wow. Wow. That whole dynamic of parents, especially the male parents, playing a role in their children's lives, I wanted to bring up into 2024. That's why I asked you, Brother Barry, you, Brother Rodney, specifically, how you all spent it or did. And I applaud you being with your children and continuing to be positive influence in lives. You know, too often we hear of folks not handling their business. And you young men are very much not in that conversation because you are out here constantly handling your business, not only for yourselves, but also for your prodigy. And I wanted to support you all for that.
Thank you kindly, brother.
No problem at all. But, moving right along, December 6th, what was that, 2021, Rodney? Do you remember where you were?
Yes, I do. I was in front of the TV.
You were at home in front of the television?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. What were the thoughts in your mind when you first saw all that foolishness happening on campus?
My timing was off. That was my thought.
And I know exactly what you were saying. I know exactly where that came from. I got you. How many years have you been retired at that point?
Probably, oh, wow, 10, 12, 10, 13, something like that.
So you all,
I don't even know how many years I've been retired now, Lee, but it was,
are you
10,
serious?
13, something like that.
What year, do you remember what year you retired?
2007.
So that was 14 years, quick math, 14 years. So, yeah, you're about 14, 15 years old. Yeah, absolutely. I thought the same thing. I was like, ooh, if I was still in service, ooh, Lord have mercy. I could only imagine. I could only imagine some of those. Yo, let me tell you something.
My son is in service, and
right,
I was a bit surprised, not totally surprised, because military service is a microcosm of general society, even though I think the military used to do a better job of weeding out certain people, not racist. I never thought they did a good job of weeding out racists, but they did do a good job of weeding out certain types of people. And my son told me that the people that he knew responded to it was disappointing to me, but it also goes back to what I said about my timing was a little bit off. What happened was 100% is just that I had it off by a few days.
Oh, okay. Okay. What do you think will happen with the Colorado case at the Supreme Court?
So initially, I did not think that the Supreme Court would take it. And until, if you guys have heard officially that they are going to take it, I still sort of lean that they're not going to take it. I guess
they're
that's
taking
where
it.
I am.
They're taking it. It's official.
Okay, so then if they take it, or now that they're taking it, I don't know if that means that they're going to make a ruling on it or they can throw it back. If they can throw it back, I'm going to go with they're going to throw it back. If they cannot throw it back, then I believe that they are going to rule that the 14th Amendment is what it says it is.
Rashi, you're not a big voter. Does any of this register on your radar with respect to the case, respect to the ramifications, or is it just noise to you?
I mean, it's not noise because some of these people that he put in place, Trump,
mm-hmm.
are the judges that the school people are going to, that are allowing them to restructure what it means to educate in the country. It all trickles down, right? It's all going to trickle down. Now, while I don't do a lot of presidential voting, I keep local stuff, mayoral stuff, gubernatorial stuff. I try to keep that tight because that's who's going to decide whether or not we have the death penalty, how much, aid they're willing to accept. Those are the real, but at the top, I don't honestly believe in the Democrat-Republican stuff. I just want to see who's going to who's on whose committees and what kind of bills and legislatures they're willing to vote for and allow through to go through, because that's where the real power is being wielded. I always when we started with George Bush, like I don't remember a time. Some would say Reagan is kind of when it started. When we start hiring these weird dudes, like not someone who can lead, just someone who is popular or someone who is lead adjacent. And so as long as we hiring weird dudes, I don't know what to make of the race. It's like when we had to vote between George Bush and who was that? It was somebody else against him, you know?
John Kerry.
Right. Just these, Al Gore and, you know, and then you find out later on all these people are beholden to Dick Cheney and Dick Ramsey or whatever his name was. So you start feeling as if it's better to pay attention to what these corporations are doing, who they're funding, and then go put. It has to be more intimate than a vote. It involves defuncting businesses and boycotts. It involves deep diving and knowledge about stock exchange behavior and shell companies. Like, how do you become a cognizant political activist if you're not willing to deep dive and do some serious research? So I'm not willing to go that far. I keep it local because I know who owns my local small black businesses, who they support, what politicians come through and support them, keeping the zoning tax, you know, workable, keeping a committee to come clean the streets so they don't get cited for blight that they didn't control. It's little stuff that I be in there with, but I can't deal with people who think it's okay to hire Donald Trump. And we didn't like, for real, we don't even like his acting. Like, I don't understand it. I don't understand that power structure that would pump up a George Bush or a Donald Trump or you understand? Right. Where the hell did they find Mike Pence? Where do you find a Mike Pence? So I don't understand the structure of that.
Indiana
so
elected
I keep it local.
His governor.
Yeah.
That's
Indiana,
what I'm saying. How do you find him?
Governor.
Where did they find him?
Well, they found Mike. I mean, you find Mike Pence because Mike Pence, you need Mike Pence as a conservative, evangelistic type conservative. You need him to get the evangelistic vote. That they wouldn't have just went with Trump because Trump does not necessarily show their values, right? And so there's just a lot to it. I just think that a lot of it is just about theater. And before Donald Trump ran for president, we saw his face on TV a lot. We even seen him challenging the previous president, President Obama, before he even talked about running for seat. Donald Trump has never been a mayor. He's never been a governor or a city council member, right? He was just a guy off TV. But the way that the media pinned him versus President Obama, it made him presidential-esque, if you will, by him just being a counterpart to the current black president, right? Now, when have you ever seen someone who wasn't a politician be pinned as an equal or an equivalent or a rival to a president? You've never seen that before. You've never seen someone being able to troll or do that back and forth between himself and a sitting president. So I think that helped catapult him. Same thing with George Bush Jr. I think when he was the president of Texas, he got a lot of airtime on the airwaves. And so we should have saw that coming because they were priming him. And so whoever today is getting the airwaves on MSNBC, CNN, Fox, or what have you, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, that's who they're priming to run. And they'll have TV shows, whether it's on NBC, Fox, or CBS, what have you. They'll do a whole soft introductory to the person. They'll have us laughing about the person. They'll make that person into a hero. And somehow, some way, they will deliver that to us. And this goes back to one of the things I talked about back in the day on rap radio, is that this country is a Hellenistic culture base. So they use theater, they use theater, and they use movies and television and radio as a way to use propaganda to prep us. So that's where I feel like we got a lot of this madness. Now, going back to Lee's original question about, December 6th, it was 2021. I was at home watching, and what I thought when I saw it was just simply, this is the sign of when the joke's gone too far, right? The joke just literally went too far. And no one had control, honestly. And I felt like what we saw was white privilege on display, because if those were black folks acting that way, they would have mowed them down. I want to say either a year, maybe within the same year, maybe 2 years prior, it was a mother who seemed like she was having a mental break, was African American, who drove over in Pennsylvania Avenue, and I remember they gunned her down. And she was driving. So I find it ironic that you gun this woman down who's having a mental health crisis, but we see these people who are.
But it was the white dude, Larry. You remember the white dude who landed a helicopter? He landed the glider down on the lawn?
Mm-hmm. I remember that too. And he was able to live, right?
He walked
remember
out.
He lived, remember?
That's right.
Right. So you know, I just think that, you know, it's a level of, you know, what we see versus, and it goes back to, you know, how much of reality are we living? How much of reality are we paying attention to? Because I'm not shocked by Donald Trump. I live in a state where Jesse Ventura became governor, okay? We had Jesse the Body as governor. And that tells you, in America, politics is a lot of theater. Ronald Reagan, the Duke, was president of the United States, and they said say no to drugs, and they brought more drugs than ever in this country, right? So I just look at it, and one other thing too, minus Trump and Obama, a lot of the other presidents, if you really look at them, I think everyone else was like from a southern state. We've had a lot of southern presidents that we don't really talk a lot about. A lot of southern presidents. Biden is the other one that wasn't a southern president, but I'm pretty sure if I do some research, he probably got some southern roots. But we've had a lot of southern sons of Jim Crow, sons of the Confederacy become maintained as presidents in this country, and Reagan was the other one. But a lot, the rest of them were southerners. Mm-hmm.
I never thought about that.
Because I'm
why not
Elizabeth
Warren? Yes, but,
you know what I'm saying? Why not Bernie Sanders? Why not? I know they old, but at least they literate. You know, why not why not Cornel West? For real, he literate. Why are we propping up these weird dudes?
Well, Cornel doesn't have the aesthetic look.
Is a weird dude.
Bernie doesn't have the aesthetic look. Bernie is Jewish. A lot of the right, as well as some of the left, they have their ideas about Jewish folk. You know, this country still have a lot of xenophobia, a lot of racism, a lot of things that's underlying that why certain people can't win. It's the reason why Nikki Haley goes by Nikki Haley. When I heard that she was Indian, I thought they were talking about Native American, but no, her family's actually from India. That's not her. You know, she wasn't born Nikki Haley. As a matter of fact, Nikki's not even her first name. Did you guys know that? Did you guys
know
what her first name is? Do you guys know what her first name is? Go ahead, brother.
No, what is
it? It's Nimrata. It's Nimrata.
Yeah, Nimrata. So that tells you that, you know, if she ran under her maiden name, the Republicans would be like, man, get this woman on up out of here. They wouldn't want to deal with it. And that tells you a lot about this country, and I say that all the time, is like we have a lot of posers posing, and a lot of it is really, you know, Brother Rodney, you said it in acting or actors. We have a lot of actors. I still say if Howard Dean wins our primary against John Kerry, he easily whoops George Bush. Bush couldn't keep up with him with a debate. Bush couldn't keep up with Dean had the money. They had money. So he wasn't going to be able to outspend them either. And he had ideas. But, once again, Howard Dean is also Jewish. And so you have a lot of these other things that's underlying that won't allow certain people or certain types of people to become presidents in this country. And a lot of it, you know, when you hear about, you know, a lot of these, you know, this racism or these other isms, they still do exist.
Rodney?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. I thought you might have wanted to say something. You were putting a lot in the chat. I thought you had something to say.
Well, Brother Barry is anyway. Pretty much saying it. So, I mean, I had already put in the chat that the number one job is for training to be an elected official and especially president is to be an actor. I put in the chat, and I think Brother Barry said it, that when the question came up about Mike Pence, I said Mike Pence was validation for, and I gave a long list of white supremacists, white nationalists, fascists, racists, and Christian nationalists, and et cetera. Brother Barry, he's hitting it out. The only thing I will add is these people have done nothing to us that we did not give them permission to do. And I am specifically talking about black people. Now, it's everybody, but because it adversely impacts black people more than anybody, and because we typically determine who wins or not, I'm going to go back to what I initially said, and these people are not doing anything to us that we, and that we as us black people, gave them permission to do. We allowed them to lie to us so much that I even used to hear black people say, if he ain't lying, I'm not voting for him because something must be wrong with him. And I was like, wow, what? That's some brainwashing right there that I don't know if we can ever clean that out of you. And I've heard people, there's black people to this day who say that they're pro-black, saying that X45 is better for black people than Biden. There's people that say that they're just same. One is not better than the other for us. That is all ludicrous. That is the impact of brainwashing. Even Sister Rashi says she don't really get down with national politics. She focuses on what's personal to her, which is local voting. Well, heck, there's nothing more personal in this country than voting, period. And people keep trying to separate one being more important or less important than the other, national elections or local elections. Well, do you all remember them people who were snatched off the streets in Portland?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the ones that were snatched off the street by the people wearing all black with no insignia on it and riding in the black vehicles. And when they said they were taken to wherever they were taken, most of the time it wasn't government buildings as best they could tell, and that there was no documentation for them. So the reason why I bring it up is that's done locally. And so what happens nationally impacts locally. As a matter of fact, when X45... the question we had at the gathering was, what happens if he wins? And we're actually going to hold a discussion on that. What is the world? And Lee, you said something about getting a passport. Here's the thing. You might be able to run, but you won't be able to hide. because what's going to happen, and we're seeing it already, is the alt-right white nationalist fascist strong men that are really weak throughout the whole world have been waiting for their great white hope. And so these were the seeds that were already planted in the ground. And then X-45 came along and spewed a bunch of fertilizer in his rhetoric. And I'm being polite saying fertilizer. And
the bovine defecation.
Fertilizer, there it is. That fertilizer helped them crops grow. And this is the harvest that we're seeing. So this has been there since before this country was a country. I'm not saying, oh, no, this is Civil War. No, this country has always been like this. And they waited on him. He came along. That's why even if we get rid of him, they're going to have to get rid of a bunch of other people, which is why I think we're going to get to that topic later, why this 14th Amendment thing is so important and why we see some of these conservatives and mostly white people saying that are supposedly institutionalists, right? The reason why they're not supporting the states' rights, because they're supposed to be a states' rights party, right? All of these states are saying that they don't want him, and all of a sudden they wanted to go to the court to make it national. That's not state rights, states' rights. And that's because some of them know that the 14th Amendment will be applicable to them. So, yeah, local politics is important, but it's no more important than national politics. National politics are important, too. I don't know if it's any more important than local politics. I just know it's important, and black people need to get into this game. You can talk about every show and the Kardashians, love and hip, whatever it is that you do that's important to you. Sports, you can go down with the athletes. Entertainers, you can go down with the entertainers, right? But yet, you don't even know who your representative is. We have to do better, because remember, X-45 says if you see somebody stealing, you can shoot them on sight. Who's he talking about? He also says, remember when George Floyd happened? Because of that, he recently said that he is going to indemnify the police. Are we not catching this? He's telling us exactly how he's going to treat us. Because when those police officers got arrested for George Floyd, if X-45 becomes in charge again, he's saying you couldn't do that. Whatever they do is okay, and who are they going to do it most to is going to be us. These white people are talking about 3,000 rounds of ammunition isn't enough, because they want to be ready when the president calls them. He's talking about, we're talking about 1/6 a day. He says when he gets in office, he is going to pardon all of the 1/6 people. Well, once he pardons those 1/6 people, especially the ones that stayed loyal to him, they are going to be more endeared to him. You're talking about the secret police of the SS and World War II with the Nazis? There is the foundation of his secret police. He said he's going after people. He says, I am your retribution. Retribution against who? Black people first, and then everybody else do. And he even said in government, if you're running for office and you came after him, he would use the power of government to go after you. How many times do you need to be slapped in the face before you wake your backside up? I stand down.
The vote is short, as many years. Often we say it's the most critical vote we've ever done. This is the most important election ever. I really don't see that being more applicable than this year, in all honesty. This isn't just a vote for a president. This is a vote
that will affirm or disprove our democracy, our desire for democracy. Going back to your comments about the Supreme Court, be it they actually rule on it or they kick the can, I've said on the show before, and I'll say, this will be John Roberts. Regardless of what the hell he did, they've done before or after, this will be the thing that this court is most remembered. No disrespect to women and women's rights. Whatever they decide in this case has implications only for the sovereignty of our nation, but our place at the table as one of the big boys is. This is a huge, huge for them to be. I hope that those on the court, either side, in the middle, doesn't fucking matter, are aware of that and will put that above all else. Because if they don't, and our democracy fails, it will be upon the shoulders, squarely upon the shoulders of the. That's it. That's all. There's nothing else to say about it. It will be squarely on the shoulders of the judge because they failed to do their job for partisan without a doubt. So, Brother Barry, I'm
going
to see you up.
So we're talking about who?
That.
So for now, who do we have? We didn't got Biden. We know that's the devil we know. Oh, Sleepy Joe, our friend, old Joe Bo. Joe, our good friend.
But we know the other devil.
Williamson. Phillips. Trump. Hayes. Rashwami. Nope. Ramaswamy. Hutchison, Brinkley, sorry about that, Binkley, DeSantis, Christie, Kennedy, West, and Stein. Okay?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Now, three Democrats. Haley, yeah. She's one of the seven Republicans.
She.
And. Huh?
She, you say who?
I said she.
Okay, my fault.
And three independent party people.
Okay.
And you're saying we have to. We have to decide. This is our picking, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. And so, as of now, none of these people have said who they gonna run with, right?
Correct.
It's not like we have a Trump Haley ticket, or a Biden Phillips ticket.
It's right? Going to be a Trump Haley ticket.
It's going to be a Trump-Haley ticket.
It's going to be a Trump-Haley. Absolutely. Absolutely. He's going to try to combat fire
and
with fire.
Okay. And what? A Biden-Kamala ticket?
Unfortunately.
Okay.
Thank you. I didn't have
and
to
what?
Say it.
And Cornel West is going to either have to give with Stein or Kennedy?
I sure hope not. I would lose respect for the brother if he did that. And he came to the gathering on multiple occasions. I've spent time with that brother. I'd like to think he is too intelligent to make a sounds like itch move like that. You know what, Lee, let me just say this. When you're in basic training, you hear a whole lot of cursing and swearing from the TIs and the DIs. And I just put in the chat, so I guess I share it with everybody else, because that's what we do in this show. This makes me feel like I want to use some of that language that I heard in basic training by those TIs and that you hear with DIs. Because I don't even understand why this is a question. As a matter of fact, there's a scene in Black Panther when Okoye is speaking with her husband, and he's asking her, love you with. And she says, with no hesitation, without question. There is no question on who we should vote for as black people. The only reason why there is a question is because a person is misinformed, has been informed with disinformation, or there is something mentally wrong with them. That's it. The choice has never been clearer in my lifetime, and I've gone through more presidencies than all of you. I stand up.
Well, Brother
Barry, let me get back in here. Yeah.
Because, Brother, one of the candidates is from your neck of the woods. What's up with Mr. Phillips, with the candidate Phillips?
Well, you know, wouldn't vote for him for dog catcher. But with that being said, I think no one likes to point out more than me that the problem is that we keep giving people bad choices. And that's something that I believe that collectively, that's an American problem. And we got to do this election this year, and here's another vote. And I hear what Rodney's saying, but folks still are voting, holding their nose nonetheless. We have another president who's similar to Reagan that could possibly be having dementia. And do we really want Kamala Harris to have keys to the country?
Good Lord, no.
That's something that we...
Good Lord, no.
Those are the things that you have to think about. And the other side of it is, why are the choices getting worse? And I want to go back because, you know, you brought my neck of the woods up, but I want to go back to our current Attorney General, Keith Ellison, when he was a United States congressional member, and he was supposed to become the chair of the DFL. And these chairs to these parties matter because they are the ones who select candidates. They're the ones that get the full pick going. I honestly believe that the Democratic Party, as well as the Republican Party, the bullpens have never been as empty as they are today. And you have people who are running just for the sake of running. A lot of people are running just to make a statement about themselves, not because they want to better this country. And Rasami, or whatever that dude's name, Salami, whatever that dude's name, he knows he doesn't have a snowball chance in hell to vote. You know, if you are a Republican and you got any melanin in your skin, you know the Republicans are not going to put you for it. They can like you all day long, but they're going to say, yeah, but you're black. Yeah, but your parents are not from this country. Yeah, we like you, but you're Asian. They're not voting for you. You already know that about the party. Same thing with the Democrats. I think the Democrats, the big tent theory with the Democrats, sometimes put a lot of cracks in, and people that they could be possibly getting behind, they don't, because they're worried how they're going to fracture the Big Ten idea with some of the special interest groups, which no one should care. It's called special interest for a reason. It means that if the special interest is not all the time the interest, so you only think about them on a minority basis, meaning not all of the time, but a small few of the time. You can't run the party for that small group. And our brother said we have to know our issues and put up our candidate for the primary. That's where the DFL comes in, though, brother. That's where they're supposed to do that. That's part of what the DNC, I said DFL. That's our Democratic Farm Labor here inside of Minnesota. But the DNC is what Brother Keith is supposed to be over nationally. That's what the DNC is supposed to find those candidates, supposed to whip those candidates in. They're supposed to find the Obamas for the conventions to give these moving speeches so they can move in to be the next politician. That has not happened whatsoever. And I just want Americans, more so who you vote for, I want you to be an informed voter, because I figure the better the informed is at the poll, then you can make great decisions. If it's really just about party ideology, if it's about left and right, red versus blue, you're going to vote like a gang member, and you're not going to care, and you're just going to give your vote away because someone's throwing up the same signs as you. And I think we need to mature collectively in order for that to happen. So that's my soliloquy. But I just don't like the idea, Brother Lee, Brother Rodney, Sister Rashi, the idea that you vote for a person, but you got to hold your nose to vote for the person. You should be able to walk into the booth and feel comfortable. And we don't want to keep doing the least, the devil you know. The devil you know is not the routine that we want to keep on going by as a country if we're talking about building this democracy to last another 400 some odd years and to make some of the early promises that it made to the people. It's an experiment, but we know that blindly voting does not help this country.
So I agree with Thomas, is that both parties, as far as I'm concerned, represent the Crips and the Blood. Now, as a former gang member, I feel qualified to say that I don't want either gang representing me. But as a person who lived in different gang, had to cross different gang communities, I flew my stuff when I walked through the one that was friendly to me, and then I turned my jacket inside out when I walked through the ones that weren't friendly to me. And if we keep allowing the leadership of the Crips and the Blood to give us the only choice in the primary, the game is already lost for us. And so what I put in the chat is we have to know our issues, which for the most part we do not. We have to organize around those issues. And then we Black people, it shouldn't be people in general, but I'm talking about Black people, then have to find someone that's willing to run, which is difficult. I get it. I'm out there in that world. And then we have to support them with all due fervor for them to win in the primaries and make it to the general election. And in this day, it cannot be a member of the GOP. In this day. And we have to support them. That means support them with our words, but our actions and our treasure. That's what we have to do. This right here is actually, the process is simple. Now, getting people to understand it, that's definitely an uphill battle on a very slippery slope. But that's what we have to do. There has been no athletic endeavor that we have been allowed to participate in that we have not dominated, because that's who we are. Academically, when we are afforded somewhere near the same opportunities as other groups, we achieve academically, regardless of our background, on par or exceed any other group. We have allowed people to tell us that, oh, politics, I don't want to be involved with politics. I'm not into politics. But like, how can you not be in politics when politics is all in you? As a matter of fact, when you go to the bathroom, that's politics. There is no time that politics does not involve what we do. And there is no endeavor where there's no political involvement. So we have allowed people to brainwash us into not doing the thing that white people are most fearful that we do. Jim Crow was about keeping Black people from voting. That's That's the history of it. Most of the things that we see happening in the nation today and what gave X-45 his rise to power is anti-blackness. There is no way there can be a black man dominating white people, i.e. Barack Hussein Obama, because that's how they like to call it. Well, Barack Hussein Obama B-Day backside, and I'm using local vernacular here because that's how hot I am on this issue and with my people. And they'll say, Rodney, why are you so hard on black people? Everybody vote. Doggone Skippy. That was going to be a four-letter word. Doggone Skippy. But that's other people. This is my people. This is us. And we need to get into this game and stop being led around with a ring in our nose and play the game like we would play any other game. Because this is life and death.
Hold on, Rodney.
I articulated earlier what's going on with the people. No, brother.
You couldn't say damn. Oh, goodness. Rodney.
If I'm talking about something that's
restricting
water, I'll say it. But this isn't restricting water.
So Rodney, let me chime in on that. So I didn't mention Howard Dean earlier, and I always point this out with Obama because I think that sometimes history is rewritten and then it's rewritten in the way that folks feel comfortable or really reliving the story. Sister Rashi, did you know that Howard Dean was upset with with the Clinton administration for what he believed they're sabotaging him against John Kerry? Did you know that?
No, I didn't know about back, you know, what had, I just, after they showed that video of him looking a little bit unhinged, nothing else seemed to be.
And he wasn't unhinged. He was just excited to get to the next race. And what really did him in was he was on MSNBC with Chris Matthew on Harbaugh. I was watching this segment live, and he said if he became president, he was going to break up all the media conglomerates because he felt like the media belonged to the people. And he said that these major news networks who are buying up all the other networks as well as all the newspapers, they are stopping the flow of information to the American public. Chris Matthews asked him on that show, you do recognize where you're at, and do you want to walk back that statement? Howard Dean said, no, I meant every last word. He was leading in Iowa up until that point, and they believe that's what sank his campaign. But I bring him up to say if he wasn't upset because the Clinton sabotaged his campaign, and he ended up becoming the DNC. The 50-state strategy that Obama used to win was Howard Dean's strategy. A lot of folks don't know that. Howard Dean was the one who gave Obama the list that Bernie Sanders said that he couldn't get from Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Howard Dean gave Obama all of the access that the Clintons had and gave him the blueprint on how to win. And that's how he got in. So sometimes in politics, we look at the winner, but we don't look at the strategies and all of those things to get people where they need to be. And the other things that have to happen behind the scenes. So it's very strategic. I only bring that up to say I agree with Rodney on some points. I think that the American public in general don't truly really understand democracy anymore. And I brought this up on the show in the past. I think we have people who are only focusing on capitalism. And when you focus only on capitalism, you don't really understand politics, not with the style of capitalism that people are used to. Everybody's really just trying to get theirs. Everybody's really practicing exploitive capitalism. That's why we have so many people talking about buying duplexes and flipping property, because we only think about how can we sell more bottled water, right? How can we take what is supposed to be a right for everyone and resell it back to everyone? So I feel like that's part of the issue. The other thing that I do believe, too, is that it's hard to get good – it's hard to really see good candidates when we're not necessarily being ushered – like they're not being ushered in. I always bring up that there was a young sister that was a mayor of Compton who did a lot of things to turn Compton around. she never made it to the national scale, to the national scene. There's a lot of good governors and mayors and other places that are doing great things in politics, but because they're not willing to sell their soul, sound like entertainment a little bit, right? Because you ain't willing to suck the white penis, you can't get ahead. And I feel like that's part of the problem that we're not talking about. We're asking a lot of people to step up, but what do you really got to do to step up, right? Because let's keep it in mind, Obama won, but y'all do know that part of the reason why the CDC wasn't dealing with Obama was when he got to Capitol Hill, he wasn't dealing with the black folks inside of Capitol Hill. He wasn't talking to our folks. He was putting himself around nothing but white people. And you can't be mad at the CDC for seeing a brother or a sister who hobnob with nothing but white people. We find that strange. We're going to look at that person like you can't trust that person. That's a natural inclination. So I say all that to say we just have to – there's no perfect way to go about it, but I hate getting to the – I hate the year of the vote, right? And we start coming up with all these ideas and these things. We shouldn't be thinking just about 2024. Our strategy should be more so about what we're going to do in 2032. That's how you really get to it. It's not just about what's going to happen the next election cycle. You need to look down and the 8 years out, and you start the process of putting people out 8 years out. That's how you win in politics. Every politician was chosen years ago. Joe Biden kept coming back into our face, back into our face, back into our face. Will Joe run? No, I don't think I'm going to run. Will Joe run? I don't think I'm going to run. But then he ends up running and then becoming Obama's vice president, right? And then, hey, you going? I don't think I'm going to run. I'm going to let Hillary do it. Hillary loses. And then he says, okay, I'm going to run. But he stayed in the forefront. So he's always been where we could see him. So it's not hard to pick them. Now, my next question to you all, what Democrat do you know currently that's not Joe Biden or Kamala Harris that's always in the forefront? Because that's going to be your next presidential candidate after Biden wins this next term.
Schumer. Chuck Schumer. Then was the boy from California in the House that's running for Congress. Isn't that his name? So Chuck Schumer, because he's in the Senate, and then Adam Schefter, is that his name? The boy that's House
that's
that got
not,
cinched.
That's not his name, but that's not
the
his
one
name,
is in the House
that
got
close. Yes, okay, he's running for the same seat that Dianne Feinstein held, and he's actually running against a Katie Porter, who, I mean, I'm not in California any longer, but I would vote for her before I'd vote for Adam, because Adam is straight up establishment. And, you know, as Thomas is talking, this is about that education. And this is also about what I talk about why every level of government is important. Because in order to understand a lot of this, people have to be educated on it. And since seemingly a lot of citizens aren't educated on it, we have to make sure that our children are educated on it. Well, that is a local issue. Here in Nevada, in Clark County, the fifth largest school district in the nation, when children graduate from our school district and go to college or whatever they do, they graduate not knowing how to actuate the levers of power and not even knowing what they are, because they get so little education on government. And so I would ask you all, how literate are your high school graduates on, because they can vote then, right? Some of them can vote before they get out of high school, but and there's a few that when they graduate because they got skipped or whatever, they're too young. But in general, when they graduate high school, they are voter eligible. Even those white wig-wearing white supremacists told us way back then, those so-called founding fathers, and Benjamin Franklin was one of them, and I believe it actually was him who said it, we have a democracy, if we can keep it, or we have a republic if we can keep it. His other comment was, in order for our form of government, democracy, to work, we must have an educated electorate. One of the reasons why you see the United Daughters of the Confederacy, other white supremacist groups trying to take voting and government and civic out of the classroom, and they've been successful in doing it, is so that there is not an educated electorate. So you have empty heads that can be filled with any kind of nice sounding or the wildest sounding rhetoric. And so that's something that we could take, no, that's something that we have to take control over. Don't think that those women who are coming up with all of these things about school, people say that I shouldn't call their name because that gives them power. You know, those mothers, that mother group, they're coming up with things to take black education, black history. I mean, they've been trying to do it for years, but now they're doing it more in the open. These are things that's being done right in front of our faces. So take control of your local school board. Take control. Rashi talked about local government. That's local government. Take control of your state assembly person. That's local government. Let's do those things to get to things, and so people can get trained on how to be a politician, right? How to win elections. Because you all said it earlier, we don't have a black bench, right? So we got Cornel West out there, and I like the brother, unless he goes with one of them crazy people that we mentioned earlier. But I like the brother. But I also know that brother's not going to win. Now, they say speak it into things into existence that you want to see. So, yes, I pray that the brother could get some traction, but the history of it tells me the brother's not going to come close. So, Brother Barry, we have to do two things at once. Yes, we should have been looking at 20, and my caveat is when we were talking about the Black Leadership Summit, we were talking about the Black Leadership Summit to do a version of what you were talking about. And I agree with you 100% that let's start preparing now, because I said it on this show. As a matter of fact, I called the date to the date that in 2020, I said, if the Republicans win, we will only have one time to save ourselves, and that will be in 2024. The 2022 election for the United States House of Representatives is going to give us an idea of where we're headed in 2024. But 2024 is the absolute last opportunity for black people to save themselves, and in doing so, saving this nation. And I will take it even further, saving the world, because the alt-right is on the march throughout the world. The Erdogan, look at that. You got the dude in Argentina that Cheeto Mussolini congratulated, right? He fell in love with a fat man I don't want to insult fat people. He fell in love with the North Korean dictator. They sent each other love letters, right? He went in a private meeting with Putin and wouldn't even let his own translator in, just him, Putin, and Putin's translator. And the list goes on. So we're at a moment in time, a point in time. So I was alive during the Cuban Missile Crisis. That was an existential threat to this country and to the world. Today is the modern version of the Cuban Missile Crisis, but we're not acting like it. We need to act like it. If we don't get past this, remember, X45 says, you all took away from me a part of my first term. So when I get reelected, I need more time to make up for it. Oh, by the way, I am going to be a dictator for a day. He said he's going to be a dick for a day. And we're all, let me take that back. Many are bending over to receive the golden phallus. I'm not one of them. And so I try to be diplomatic often when I speak, But no, we need to slap people in the face right now and wake them the so-and-so up, because I don't want to, my children, I don't want to see you as freedom fighters for us when the odds are going to be even more against us than in Jim Crow. I understand that some of you don't, you understand Jim Crow from what you've heard and through writ, but you didn't feel it. You didn't see it. You weren't touched by it. And what I'm telling you is, as a person who did live through it intimately, what is coming, what he showed us, 1/6 and after, leading up to today, what he's told us, and I articulated, indemnifying the police, shoot looters on sight. He said he wants concentration camps, enough to hold millions of people. That's what, those are words that came out of his mouth. And then people tell me, well, Rodney, don't compare him to Hitler. Get the so-and-so out of here. Because the walkie-talkie is doing the exact same thing as that crazy walkie-talkie. So, yes, we need to wake the AT-22 picks up and get in the game, because this is life right now, and it's our life. And there will be no place that you can run.
Sesame Street. Rodney keeps smelling everything. I know he was on Sesame Street.
Yeah,
okay,
really.
Hey, yeah,
it's created for
plain.
Black people.
Fill it out and make
that.
It plain.
So I do. I do want
by the letter H.
So I do want to say a couple of things. Y'all are crazy. I do want to say a couple of things, and this is just, you know, my take on a couple of things. I agree with you, Roddy, on 90% of what you're saying. I do. I think that you have to be able to walk and chew gum at the same time. And that's just the grown-up side of living, right? Like, you know, politics to me is – you said sports, because politics is my favorite sport, right? Like, I love politics. I love the idea of politics. But I also believe that a part of what we struggle from is trying to always play the savior role without really just saying – we don't necessarily need to play the savior role. The role that we need to play is the long-term game. We should always be putting our pieces on the board and saying, we're gonna take this and we're going to go long-term with it. You know, whatever's going to happen is going to happen, because we're going to do a slow drip into this. And I feel like that's where we struggle collectively. We're always in a situation where – we're always playing from behind, and everyone knows that we're playing from behind. And so we're always responding versus making them respond to us. That's i.e. why I wanted to create 12 Watch, because I didn't want us to respond anymore. I wanted them to respond to us. Let us get ahead. And then by us being ahead, we don't have to play from behind anymore. They got to play catch up with us. Once you see and you can actualize things, then you can mobilize and strategize better. The other thing that I want to say as far as, you know, the bullpen, is that a lot of the bullpen could simply be solidified and even voting if we really took relationships serious. And look at that. I know you guys talked about it last week, but look how it always goes back to relationships. Because if you got two people in the household, they're probably going to vote as a unit, right? And then if they got children that are teenage children who are voting age, or adult children that are voting age, they're going to vote along with them in that unit. And if you got a community full of two-parent households with children up under them, they're all going to vote under a unit. They're going to talk politics at the table. They're going to talk politics at the cookout. They're going to talk politics on the drive out of town with family while they're in the airport, et cetera. That's why relationships are so critical, so key. That's why values, and when we talk about value voting, most of voting is about values. It really is about values. It depends on your values. That's why it's so important to really identify what your values are and what are important values to maintain and hold on versus which ones do you give away. Because we can say with our own community, part of the problem why we struggle politically is because we gave away so many values that allowed us to hold true to ourselves. so we don't have those values. So when we go on the voting booth, we're no longer voting on if it's upward mobility for families. Not when you got a single-parent household idea. You don't think that way. You're thinking about how can I, oh, can they give me something? Not my community, not my people. What can I get? That's why when folks are talking about Trump and they're saying, hey, look at what we got. Look at what we got with the stimulus package. Do you understand what you got through the stimulus package? You only got it because you were already running in deficit. You allow someone to burn the house down, and now you're going to give them credit for putting water on the house? That doesn't make sense. But when you don't look at it from that aspect and you only think about yourself as an individual, you don't see the collective fuckery that's there. Roddy won't cuss, but I'll cuss one. I'm going to say a couple cuss words for you, Roddy, okay? And so when you look at this shit.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And when you look at this shit and you really understand what you're smelling and you're not thinking that it's roses, when you're not getting caught up in the pageantry of it all, go ahead.
But no. I want you to finish, and I was going to come in on the tail end as you finish.
Okay. So when you look at the pageantry of it all, if we really went back to our values and collectiveness, our voting would look a lot different. And, Brother Rodney, some of the things that's driving you crazy wouldn't even be present because now we would be thinking based off of family values versus individual values.
But that's not the issue. The issue is exactly what you laid out previously. The issue isn't family nor community. The issue is democracy versus capitalism. And unfortunately, too many folks have put the dollar above everything, which includes their values, their family, their community, hell, even themselves. They've put the value of a dollar above everything. So they're not voting because it's the best thing for them. They're not voting because it's the best thing for the community. They're voting because it's the best thing for their damn pockets, period. That's what it's about. You know, Ronnie said earlier that folks are talking about they feel that it's better. And, Carla, I got you. I'm going to bring you up in a hot second. That folks are voting and talking about they feel that Trump is a better candidate, president for them. Why are they voting for Trump? Because in their head, he's a great businessman. Because he's a great businessman, my 401k, my stock, my dividend, whatever. Whatever you have monetarily is going to turn out better. Sorry, I had to hit the cough button. Is going to turn out better. And because of that, that's the person that you want. That's the person that you need. He's going to help your capital gains. He's going to reduce your business taxes. He's going to reduce your property taxes. His policies, I'm sorry, are going to do these things. And I don't have enough time to screen you, Carla, so I'm going to go raw. Morning, because you're out in Vegas. So good morning, sir, or ma'am, do you have a question or comment?
Hitler Thomas, how you doing, brother?
Hello?
Yes, hello? Sir. Yes, sir.
Hey, man, how everybody doing there? It's Henry Thorne.
How you doing, sir? How are you? Morning to you, Mr.
I'm
Thorne.
Doing good. You know, this is my first time calling in to you guys' show. Thank you, Rodney, for sending me the invitation to listen. And I want to say this. I want to say if we have more shows like you guys and talk about the solutions and the problems, we can do better when it comes down to electing our local officials, whoever we want to elect to be put in that office. See, we're not getting the real. We're getting the member recs. You know what I'm saying? So until we start
getting
it,
brother.
Until we start getting the people the real, they're going to always go with the phony that the $1,200 two times was a great lift to us. While meantime, his son-in-law just got $10 million to his best friend. You know what I'm saying? And Rodney, man, I'm telling you, you spoke on the truth today. You told them basically, you better get ready because they already ready. And they just waiting on the torch to be lit. And if you can't see this, if nobody can see this, they blind. They are blind and living in a fake world. Now, politicians, I ran for governor. I ran for city councilman. And my pastor told me myself that I wasn't going to win. My pastor didn't even know me. But for me to be going to his church every Sunday and for him to tell me I can't win, I had to change churches. Because if I'm going to listen to a loser, I will be a loser. So I have to find another church. We have to find the real people in the community that really means something for us, for black people, that's not scared to say, I want to help black people. See, we got a president that's right now that we have no choice but to vote for him. We have to vote for Biden because Biden the only thing we really have. We don't have enough nonpartisans to win, and the Republicans, we definitely ain't going to win because the Republicans are talking about sending us back to Africa. They sending us back to Shaka Zulu days. That's what they're trying to really do to us. And we sitting up there eating a popsicle like, oh, well, and it's coming. And you ain't going to wake up until it hit us, and it's going to be too late. We must vote for Biden, which is Biden. We know Biden don't care nothing for us. We know he don't. So we can kick that out the bucket, but we know he's better than Trump. And we know Trump don't really care about the Republican Party, Democrat Party. All Trump care about is his party and ruling the world and freeing Russia so Russia can take over the world. But meantime, meantime, we here in America, we running from gang violence, we running from police brutality, we running from racism, we scared of our life, and what border can we run to get help? So go ahead.
We can go to Canada, but you know you Southerners and you veganers, y'all don't like the cold, so you don't want to go that way. But if we know Biden doesn't care for us much, if we know there's no win in the Republican Party, then going back to Brother Barry's point, how do we then prepare ourselves not just for November 6, 2024, but how do we prepare ourselves for November 6, 2032? Because it's going to take about that long. It's going to take about 12 years to really put us together fundraising.
You got to the end of 2024. You ain't guaranteed nothing. We're talking about now. Right now, they're not even represent a black people's votes. They going to Latinos, Hispanics, the Asians, and everybody. They not even counting our vote. Biden them just left Las Vegas, and not one of them came to the black community. You know, because they saying that our vote doesn't matter. So what we have to do as black people, we have to come together. We have to start on corners, at schools, at libraries, we got to start having rallies, and we got to fight every party to let them know you just not going to get my vote because I'm a Democrat. You know, you're not going to do it. And we got to hold them responsible. See, one thing about it, we vote for them, but we don't hold them responsible. See, they can do anything they want to us, but we let it. But guess who they work for?
Us.
They work for us.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you, brother. Thank you for calling, and we appreciate you. Thank you for tuning in, and we hope that you join us again later, okay?
You got it. Thank y'all. Keep the show going. Keep talking about the people, black people.
Yes, sir. Okay. Yes, sir. We will. We will. All right, so again, I was trying to transition to going back to your point, Brother Barry. You know, if we know these things and we understand these things ahead of time, then how are we then starting to prepare ourselves for that next election to bring forward those new folks, younger or moderately old, or I should say moderately seasoned, in order to be in position to run, and move the country forward the next go around? You know, because that's the other side of it. As we both said, you know, we got to be able to walk and chew gum at the same time. We got to be able to do more than one thing in this this rat race that we're in. You did?
No doubt. Okay. I would tell you, and Brother said, thank you, Brother Bear, for being my Luther like Obama. I would say, you know, in my opinion, I think the best thing that we can do is try to fix the community units. Because the one thing I do want to say to Rashi, and Rashi, all politics are local. So, it's good you focus on local politics because you should. You got to start there. You got to know what's going on in your backyard, right? So I want to say that to you, sister, because I know you said that, and nobody really, you know, it wasn't affirmed. So I'm going to affirm you on that. But I do believe that we have to look from it in all phases. We have to make sure that it's local. And once again, the vote is a tool. It's a powerful tool. So you got to be willing to use that tool and wield it. But I think the best way, Brother Lee, to get the bullpen is to find those people like that. We talked about that mayor in Compton. Those black politicians who are doing effective work, who are not getting a national spotlight shined on them, and we got to start inviting them on our shows. We got to start getting these folks out to community events in other states to talk about what they're doing other ways. So they can
Asia
get
Brown.
Different looks. Asia Brown.
So
Asia Brown.
That was my other baby mother in my head.
So we can get her looks like Stacey Abrams got, right? So she needs to be able to get looks. We need to be able to get those politicians looks. Then on top of giving them looks, what we also need to do is make sure that the black dollar is going to support their candidacy wherever they want to land. Do they want to be congressional members? Do they want to run for the Senate? Like, we got people like Maxine Waters. Maxine can't keep running for forever. So who's black in her district that's going to take over, right? We need to start looking, identifying those candidates, getting those candidates props, because we don't need to lose anything. And to go back to Rashi's point, one of the things that I've noticed locally, we had this problem with our city council. This is how I can affirm what Rashi's saying. Everything is local. Ilhan Omar left our city. She was one of our state reps. We had another state rep named Bobby Joe Champion, who's African American. Keith Ellison chose Ilhan Omar only because she was Muslim. He did not choose the African American that was next in line to take that spot. That's how that was supposed to happen. Fast forward to yesterday or 2 days ago. In our city council here inside of Minneapolis, we were supposed to have two African-Americans who were going to be the chair and the co-chair of the city council. Well, guess what? One African-American, and she votes more of her sexual orientation. She's LGBTQ plus, as well as the Somali. They decided that they were not going to support those two. So since those two are out, now we have a Asian person who's now in control, as well as another white person. These are the things where we locally are not seizing that control. I blame the African-American leadership here because we've allowed other communities to outvote race us in certain seats. So they should never have that say-so because they don't understand the legacy of what we've dealt with in this country on a political scale. They don't know how important it is for us to have that power and to not let others seize that power. So we just have to make sure that people are equipped with the knowledge, but that we're also highlighting, identifying, and then giving those politicians that we're trying to get to grow up, we got to start giving them looks on a national scale. I don't care if it's something like your show, my show, larger shows, people like my man Roland Martin and others. We have to start giving those politicians more looks. And lastly, those politicians have to have a something that not only is going to be great for the country, but it's going to be great for our people. Don't go in and say your policies. You. I'm the king. I'm the president of everybody. No, you have to be able to say, I got something in this bag for everyone. Oh, this is a problem for you? Oh, yeah, we can talk about that. Yeah, because we got 365 days. I'll be in for 4 years. We can tackle all your issues.
We have 5 minutes. Well, actually, we have 4 minutes left, so we need to. I don't want to treat you any differently than I treat Rasha. You got to cut that shit short. Rodney, you ain't anything to say in the end?
Get involved now like your life depended on it. Do not vote for Cheeto Mussolini.
Cheeto Mussolini.
Okay. Rashi? Rashi?
Now let's see.
Any comments?
As always, we need to make sure that you are information seeking. Make sure that you can vet your information, that more than just you or more than just the cohort of people, make sure you get information that you disagree with. Attempt to find out why, because there's a reason why you feel that way. Also, make sure you're supporting any children in your purview. If you are around children, if you have access to anyone under the age of 18, and or those who are significantly impaired and will always have a mind of an 18-year-old. Make sure that you are helping those people who are supporting that kind of life, because it's not easy to take care of young people. For those elders out there, do not go gently into that good night. If you can move your ass, get up and move it. Walk it, run it, crawl it if you might. Do it in the chair if you have to. Roll around from side to side on the bed if you must. But do not allow your soul to be housed in a deteriorating temple without trying something to keep the mind, body, spirit trifecta in harmony. And if you can treat somebody the way you want to be treated, it'll probably work out pretty good for you in 2024. Other than that, nothing.
Okay. Brother Barry, did you have anything to close with?
No, I was good.
Oh, okay. Well, look, thank you all for, yeah, Rachi, you so damn wack. You didn't say nothing about Kwanzaa this year, I think, except for one damn time. I hope everybody had an awesome Kwanzaa. For you all who are listening live, listening later, thank you, as always. Hopefully everyone is having a awesome 2024. I hope that this year brings you everything that you want. Hey, look, in memoriam already, God damn it, the brother from Starsky and Hutch passed away. Well, I tell you, 2024 starting off, look now, you slide your ass out like 2023. Don't be too dangerous to folks. Folks should still be able to, you know, be around for 2025. But, you know, that's the first L that we've taken that pops to mind to me in 2024. And you know, I'm a 70s baby. So I remember Starsky and Hutch. You know what I'm saying? So that was pivotal in my upbringing. But you all be good. You all be safe. Until next week, as we say always about this time, we love you. And a damn thing you can do about it. Peace!